Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Does April 30th still look like the last day of the stay-at-home order in Chicago?
I think that's going to be difficult for us to say April 30th, everything comes up. I don't expect that to happen.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
I think that it will extend beyond that. And we are already in the process of thinking about, even when we get to a point where we feel safe from a public health standpoint, what will be the
sequence? No, God, please, no! 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 No!
We are all Michael today. It's 10:09. This is WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. And yeah, Mayor Lori Lightfoot's not optimistic at all that May 1st we're going to get to go out. Dr. Kevin Most is Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital Chief Medical Officer. Doctor, what was your reaction to Lori Lightfoot yesterday, or this weekend for that matter? Do you think April 30th is realistic?
No, John, I don't. You know, and not surprising. You know, when fortunately Mayor Lightfoot is listening to a lot of the scientists and epidemiologists around the country and around the area here, where although things are improving right now, if we were to loosen up too much, would we see another big spike 3 weeks from then? So I think she's being very cautious, but I think also being very smart, as we've kind of proven that what we're doing right now is working.
When do you think we will go outside?
Yeah, John, I wish I had a good answer for you. You know, we trend our numbers here at CDH as they're, when we trend them across every hospital, actually. So we all know pretty much what everyone's doing. We were a little bit optimistic going into this weekend, and I'd say that that optimism has changed a little bit recently with some additional cases. So if it were up to me to guess, I would say we're going to be closer to mid-May to late May before we see a big loosening. And then even after that, I think you're going to start to see some very controlled ways that we're going to try to dampen this down. We need a big break here if we're going to get this, and it's going to come back in the fall. So we need some time to breathe as well as to get a little bit more organized.
Doctor, I spoke to a listener over the weekend, and it took him 10 days to get a test result back. It was negative, but he just got it the other day. He's an essential worker. He's traveling the area. That's a useless test if it takes 10 days to get the results, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, John. You know, like we've said in the past, the snapshot of the test is the immediate moment. So in other words, someone who was tested 10 days ago and comes back negative, does that mean anything? Absolutely not. That individual may have been exposed to somebody's, you know, on day two, on day three, on day five. So they could actually be positive now. So that's a false reassurance. The beauty of the testing that we can do now, at least in the hospital setting, is that immediate test, the tests that we're doing in our emergency rooms, which give us the results in 15 minutes. That is great for us for deciding where someone will be placed in the hospital. The reassurance that everyone wants as far as I tested negative really does not carry a whole heck of a lot of weight at this time, especially when we're seeing turnaround times of 5 to 10 days at some of the labs.
Dr. Most, the only test I'm interested in personally is an antibody test. I just want to know if I've had it and am now immune and can therefore go about more cautiously. A test that takes any amount of time only tells me about today. It doesn't tell me that I didn't pick it up at the grocery store tomorrow. But if I knew I had an antibody, that would be reassuring to everybody.
Spot on, John. You're exactly right. That is the big test. That's going to be the big reassurance as well as turning point as far as how many people really have had this that we didn't know about and that are protected. And you need to get to what we call herd immunity, where there's enough people that would have had it so that if an individual does get it, he's not going to spread it, because let's say a group of 10 of us are together, but 8 of us have had the illness already. There's 2 that haven't. You know, that spread rate is only potentially 1 giving it to the other in a random act of 10. If we don't know that, then we're all wearing masks because we're concerned that we don't know what the antibody status is of everyone. So that will definitely be something that's going to be extremely important come midsummer, late summer, fall.
We don't have that testing available for people like me now?
Well, the testing's available. It's all being, well, I shouldn't say it's available. The testing is being developed. We have it. It's available on a very small measure. It's not commercially available yet to a point where we could test a whole bunch of people at once. And once we do get it at the volumes that we want, we're going to use those judiciously to make sure that we're testing people that are going into nursing homes, that are actually working as healthcare providers, our first responders. So the rest of us who kind of really would like to know, I think we're going to have to wait until the fall or late summer before we have enough of those tests to make an impact.
If, though, I've had an immune, maybe I knew it, maybe I don't realize it, but I'm immune, can I still carry the virus to other people?
Well, theoretically, you wouldn't, because if the virus were in your body, your body's immune system would attack it and eliminate it.
So you don't have it.
Correct. So, you know, that's probably one of the big things is, okay, we test positive for antibodies now because I had the illness a month ago. Are those same antibodies, are we going to be at the same levels in the fall? Or is this going to be one where we have an antibody response, but it doesn't really last long, and in which case then we're going to be looking at the need for the vaccine to protect us more than a previous infection?
312-981-7200 is a telephone number. Dr. Kevin Most is on a phone line. Two questions from listeners before I take some more calls here, Doctor. One was a listener who was worried about the handling of, say, deli foods. Maybe she's getting lunch meat or something like that at the grocery store. She's worried about the passing of it from a person to the food to her. I know you've generally not been worried about that, but would you just answer her question?
Yeah, I mean, the chance of the virus living on a slice of ham is very low. And if it is, it would have to be that the individual cutting the ham coughed on the ham, gave it to you, and then that you ate it while you were still pretty much in the store. So the virus is not going to sustain life long in a refrigerated environment. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about any deli, you know, fresh deli meats that are being cut. All of the grocery stores are making sure that individuals are coming that are there are not symptomatic. And if you look now, most of them are wearing masks to protect the asymptomatic from you as well. So it wouldn't be high on my list of concerns, that's for sure.
A lot of people are out walking and riding their bicycles. If some of them have it, am I going to pick it up through the fog of their breath that has the virus in it?
Yeah, you know, it's more of a droplet, so it really takes more of a cough or a sneeze to get it projectile out far enough. Just a normal breath is not going to. It's
okay,
not
but
airborne.
In that scenario, suppose mm-hmm. it's still floating in the air there. Should I worry about running into somebody's cough or sneeze?
No, I wouldn't be worried about that. I would, you know, try to make sure that you stay 6 feet away from them. If you've been out for a walk, John, you probably notice that people are social distancing even in their walks. But the amount of time that you're exposed to somebody as you're passing them is very short. You're in fresh air, you're in a breeze, and the amount of viral load is very low. So standing and talking with somebody is one thing, but as you're passing them is something else.
If I were the governor or the president, it would worry me that I'm being so careful, I'm so scared of this virus, and I'm ruining people's retirements. I think a lot of us would trade a bout of the flu for having an ability to retire. And so then I say to myself, okay, how many people are dying from the flu? More people are dying from the flu still, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and our numbers for the flu are actually down. I wish we had the same diligence and you know, really actions with influenza to be careful about people. But we have to remember that this, for the most part, many of us, if we were to get this, you know, 80, 85%, 90% of people are going to do quite well. They're going to be miserable maybe for a couple days, or they may not have any symptoms whatsoever and still come out positive. Our concern is this vulnerable population of the immunocompromised and the older people who sometimes would have done fine with influenza, but are not doing fine with this illness.
Okay, but I'm just trying to get some perspective here. I mean, it seems to me like if we cured ourselves of the of coronavirus tomorrow, the flu would still kill more people than have been dying or getting infected with the flu. So
absolutely.
Okay, but I mean, I think that's a hell of a thing, right?
But that,
there.
But you're talking about in 3 weeks. I mean, isn't that a difference, doctor? The flu season is, what, 6 months, 7 months, and these people have died in 3 or 4 weeks.
Yep. Steve, your point is right on there. There's two things about it. One is we're talking about an illness that's 120 days old, maybe at that, 130 days old. And what Steve is saying is right. Yeah, remember, our flu season starts, in September sometimes, October, and will run well past, the date that we're at right now. Assuredly, we do have 30,000 to 40,000 deaths from influenza every year in the United States, and often those are with immunocompromised people. The thing that's amazing to me is that even with 30,000 or 40,000 deaths, our immunization rate in this country is still under 50% for an illness that we know kills that many people.
Okay, so we're not very good about that, but we're not immunized at all against this other disease, and yet the flu is outpacing it. I'm not arguing with you guys. It just seems to me like when they write the book about this day, they're going to remember that we scared ourselves almost more than necessary at the expense of our retirement accounts and our businesses. What about that, Doc?
Yeah, It's a tough one, John. Have we gone too far? Have we been overcautious? And did we make too big of an impact on this? If this were an influenza strain like the H1N1, if you remember that from years ago, we at least had some defenses. We had Tamiflu, and we knew a little bit about it, and we had some people that had some protection against it. This one being a novel virus, I think there's so much unknown that we saw what was going around the world, and we reflexively tried to limit it as much as we possibly could, and potentially at the expense of our economy.
But also, though, we don't know because the social distancing slowed it, right? And so we don't know how bad it might have been had we not taken this. So to say it wasn't as bad as the flu, it's kind of hard to say that.
I'm playing the devil's advocate.
I know you are,
guys,
but yeah.
But I would like to hear some reaction to that, and I sure appreciate your patience with me, doctor, because but I haven't heard somebody pursue that without it getting very politically charged. I wanted to hear what your reaction is.
Yeah, and I agree with Steve. We don't know what would have happened had we not done all these things.
Okay.
What if we continued to have Blackhawks games and Bulls games and concerts? Would we be talking about multiples of this and all of a sudden influenza would look like nothing? So we don't know that, and we should be proud that we as a community have been social distancing and that we have been doing the things we have, because it will make an impact. Now, is it going to buy us some time? Absolutely. And buying us some time is going to allow us to make sure that we can find a medication that works, find a vaccine that works, and really find how we're going to, what's our new normal going to be.
Our governor says we're not going to games until we have a vaccine. Are you hearing anything on the front? How quickly is a vaccine being developed?
It's interesting, John. If you look at vaccines and people say, oh, well, is there a vaccine ready yet? People probably don't understand, but there are 70 different companies that are working on vaccines right now. So this is not one company working on a vaccine. This is 70 different companies working on it. And just to explain to people how the vaccine preparation works, you start with a very low dose of the potential vaccine, and you give it to an individual. And you look at two things. One, did they have a reaction to it? Did their body react adversely? And then two, did the body actually sustain an antibody response? And then you just keep increasing that until you get to a point where you get the response that you want with a side effect profile that's tolerable. We're not at that point yet. We are some that are at their third level and fourth level. And we're having a unique way to do vaccines here. It's interesting, when we look at influenza, the vaccine that you're getting with influenza, people say, well, I don't get it because I'm going to get sick. You can't, right? It's a portion of the virus that the body's going to see that shows that it is something foreign. What's happening now is we are building new vaccines on a new technology. We're actually going to give you a portion of the RNA of a virus, essentially, right, and let that multiply in the body, and then the body's going to make a response to it. Brand new technology, hasn't been used in too many cases, so a lot of unknowns still.
And then if they do come up with that, then you've got to mass produce it and distribute it. Dr. Kevin Most from Northwestern, some of your calls real quick. Let's jump in there. Pardon me for taking so much time. We'll start with Kate. You're on WGN. Kate, what was your question?
In mid-January, I came down with a cold, a fever. I had like no, I didn't have taste for anything. You know what I mean?
And you're wondering if it was here in January, right?
Yeah, because I've never been sick like that.
Hold on a second, Janet. We'll let him talk to that.
Yeah, Kate, there's a good chance that you had it at that time. A lot of things we're going to find out right now are individuals in January who had symptoms very similar to you, went to the doctor, tested for influenza, tested negative, tested for strep, tested negative. Those are the individuals that we're going to do the antibody test now and say, you know what, that infection you had in January was actually COVID. So the high probability that we had a lot of cases in January and February that were COVID cases that we didn't even know about. So if you were test today, if we were to do just a COVID test today, you would test negative on the test. And if we did an antibody test, good possibility you'd test positive. So that's why the numbers of active cases is kind of a misnomer, and we really need to know how many people actually have had the infection.
Can you imagine there's a scenario where then we'd give people bracelets who are safe to go out because maybe for 6 months we knew they were immune. It would have their name, some ID number, some date upon which they were found to have the antibody. I'm just thinking out loud here, Doc.
Oh, John, you're saying it now, but believe me, there are people that are looking into that right now. You know, immune certificates so that they can go back to work. Immune certificates so that they can work, that they've proven their immunity. In order for you to work in a hospital, you have to prove that rubella, you know, a lot of viruses that you have immunity towards.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same with this going forward.
And now that you mention it, you got to get tested for some things to work in the Chicago Public Schools.
Exactly.
Janet, you're on WGN. We just spoke to Kate. Thank you, Doctor. Janet, you're on the air. What was your question?
I understand that we're not supposed to touch our face so as not to infect ourselves. But if I haven't, don't know it, does the virus live on my face? So if I scratch my cheek, should I wash my hands if I'm around other people?
So, Janet, we recommend actually people washing their hands and face frequently during the day just because we touch our face so many times. That being said, the virus really needs to get into your nasal passages, into your throat to continue to multiply. In other words, this isn't a virus that is going to multiply on your skin. But given the opportunity to act as a vector, the face getting it into your nose and into your mouth, that is a concern. So washing your face is very important, and washing your hands after touching your face is important.
I do. So then you go back and forth all day long, and then I put Purell on, and then I think, okay, and then I touch something, so then I wash it, and then I think, darn, I shouldn't wash it because now I've washed off the Purell. So then I wash it, and then I put Purell back and forth. I go back and forth like that, Doc.
Well, let's not get crazy, though. I mean, depending on where you've been, if you've been to the grocery store, if you've been out into an environment where you may have been exposed, that's the perfect time to do that. Most of us have been quarantined in our home, and we're going to know pretty much what's going on within our own house. So in that case, it's just getting used to washing your hands on a regular basis, but I wouldn't be overly concerned, especially if you've been semi-quarantined here for the last couple of weeks.
Lots of calls and texts like this. I had severe respiratory illness, pneumonia-like symptoms, November, December. Could it have been COVID-19? Hey, John, I'm asymptomatic, but I felt terrible in December. John, I was super sick in mid-January. Fever, horrible cough, body ache, fatigue. Went to the doctor 3 times, tested negative for the flu. All of those people may well have had it, right, Doc?
Well, I would go back to the November and December people, probably not. Chances are that that illness had not gotten to this level at that time. But certainly anyone in January and February, absolutely, especially those that tested negative for influenza at that time.
Lastly, Lee says he's scheduled to have a colonoscopy and some blood work done. Is it safe to even go to a hospital right now?
Well, we're not doing colonoscopies right now. That's an elective procedure, so those are all being postponed right now. The only ones we're doing are those that are urgent or emergent. So the screening colonoscopies, the screening mammograms, all of that have been placed on hold while we get this under control. As far as having blood tests, you can certainly go in and have your blood test. They may ask you to wear a mask while you're in there. The individual who draws your blood is going to wear a mask. But for many patients, we need to know some of these blood levels for their medications that they're on chronically, to check their kidney function, liver functions. So don't stop getting your blood test done that your doctor has ordered, because we don't want to take a chronic illness that's under control and move it to a chronic illness that is not under control.
Dr. Kevin Most, thank you for your expertise and also your patience, sir.
John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You know that.